You're listening to the Sagas in SaaS podcast. This episode features audio from a previously aired live video webcast.
To Sagas in SaaS Season 4, brought to you by Geek Saga Entertainment. I'm Tara, along with fellow hosts Nick and Jonathan.
This live webcast will cover Dust, Part 3 of Iron Gold, the fourth installment in Pierce Brown's Red Rising saga, and then it will be split into four podcast episodes, with each covering one of the four POV characters. If you're watching this as a webcast, there is a chance you will hear some spoilers for later books in the Red Rising series during our live webcast. However, if you are listening to this as a podcast, any spoilery bits have been edited out.
Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube at Sagas and SaaS, or email us at sagasandsaas@gmail.com to continue the conversation. Oh, and as always, the views expressed by the hosts are those of us as individuals and do not necessarily represent the show as a whole.
As if that changes very often. Last but not least, don't forget to check out our Patreon with 10 tiers ranging from $1 a month to $40 a month. It offers tons of ways to support us and receive some great perks in return, including early access to the podcast versions of these episodes, as well as timed patron-only access to these live videos, which will only be available to our patrons for the month after they've finished airing. You can find us at patreon.com/geeksaga_entertainment. Now, Part 3 of Iron Gold. While Lysander has been fucking shit up on Io, Ephraim has been fucking shit up on Luna, and Lyra has been trying to repair her own fuck-ups, Darrow is out there committing even worse fuck-ups than all of them. He's not thoughtful or apologetic about any of it.
Nope. Once upon a time, Venus was the evil sister of Earth, until man scalped away her withering atmosphere and cooled her surface and dressed her in green and blue. It sounds pretty, right? Don't worry. Darrow is coming to fuck it all up because it seems like that's kind of all he can do these days. Darrow and crew are headed into the mouth of the beast, so to speak. Darrow orders Tongueless to keep an eye on Apollonius, aka Apple, and when they land at the Venus home of the Valii Wraths, Apple immediately asserts his dominance, but something is already amiss, as Severo notes, there should be more guards. They find Apple's brother, Tharsis, having a naked swimming party with some of his pixie-ish friends, and Darrow orders them to take Tharsis and kill the rest. Once this is done, Tharsis chides Apple for keeping such appalling company, and even deigns to call him mad, something that the mad Minotaur can't abide. In the end, Tharsis cries his apologies for betraying his brother, and Darrow and Severo are totes grossed out by their display. But hey, sounds like they're going to move forward with attacking the Ashlord's fortress, so there's that, I guess. But Severo was right. The Valii Wrath forces are decimated beyond belief. What was once an army of 250,000 now boasts. Just 911 people. And while Apple, of course, gives one hell of a speech to ramp his forces up, there's no denying that this supposed army is, as Severo notes, the scraps you leave behind when you eat a rack of ribs.
Darrow being Darrow, he tries to convince Severo that 911 real good men will somehow work out with their plans and plans and plots and plots, and that everything will be a-okay. Severo sees this bullshit and calls his bluff, and wow, is he right to do so, because yep, this particular plan of Darrow's is as half-assed and full of shortcuts as ever. Good on Severo for putting his foot down, probably bad on Severo for continuing to go along with it, but he said as soon as they wrap things up on Venus, he's out of here, back home to his family. Despite thinking Severo is a coward, his best friend's words did sow some doubt in Darrow, and as they plunge into the dark zone surrounding the Ashlord's fortress, his fears are almost immediately realized, because when he arrives beyond the barrier, he's tearing straight into a scene of death. Because if there was a back door, they totally missed it, and instead are directly in line with the enemy's perimeter defenses. How many times can we say oopsie in one summary? Oh well, here we go. Oopsie! No, really, though. The already decimated combined forces of Howlers and Apple's men are facing 36 Ripwings with nearly 200 more ships whose pilots are about to board them and join the fray. And oh yeah, the sea below also is a fucking minefield. Thankfully, well for Darrow, anyway, he is able to board one of the hoverboats full of pilots and make meat of men. His words, not ours. And also, yuck. By the time he's done his job, the others have taken care of the fleet. And though he even escapes the sniper's rounds and one of their nukes has carved a hole in the Ashlord's Island, it's only now that the enemy golds finally come to war. Soon enough, things seem more dire than ever. That is, until a trumpet blast fills the air and a flight of armored knights fall from the sky. With Apple at their head, of course, the so-called Mad Minotaur is truly living up to his name in this moment as he helps Darrow to his feet and claims that he and his forces broke the enemy on the beach. How? Well, who the heck knows, because they were outnumbered 4-1. Will we ever find out? Well, no. And above all, what's their next step? Well, for Darrow to gather Severo and Apple to his side and go pay the Ashlord an in-person visit, obviously.
One would hope that this, at least, would go as according to plan as possible, but nope. Turns out the Ashlord is a skeleton of a man who has been slowly but surely dying from poison for years. Oh, and Apple, he knew all about this. Well, sort of. He's the one who arranged to have Old Man Grimace poisoned from prison, nonetheless, though he claims he didn't know that it actually took. And while the Ashlord has been wasting away, it's really his daughter Atalantia, his final fury, who has been running the show. Of course, the peace talks were always a sham, and she's about to attack the fleet at Mercury. But that's not even all, folks, because now the Ashlord also reveals the news of Pax and Electra's kidnapping. While Darrow and Severo try to process this information, the Ashlord bites down on a poison-filled false tooth. Not that they're going to let him go that easily. Nope, they allow Apple to burn the man alive. Ashes to ashes, indeed. The Howlers prepare to leave Venus as soon as Darrow and Severo bring them news of the kidnapping, but at the last moment, Darrow turns away because he believes their men on Mercury need him more than his son. Honestly, there's no point in even trying to unpack any of this. Suffice it to say, at least Severo, Clown, and Pebble are headed back to Luna. Well, and maybe some others, but many decide to remain with Darrow, including Alexander, Calloway, Tongueless, Thraxa, and Rana. They're taking the Venusian hostages with them, so while Darrow does deactivate the bomb in Apple's head, they definitely don't part as buds because, lol, Apple wasn't ever going to have an easy time taking Venus. Without the hostages, it's probably nearly impossible. But Darrow, for his part, is pretty whatever about anything to do with Apple because he's gone full rage monster over being played for a fool by the Grimaces. Grimace-i? Whatever. Grimace-i. Need we say oopsies yet again?
Never say oopsie too many times. Quick note about that end revelation is that we also find out that it was not them that worked with the syndicate to get the kids kidnapped. It was, in fact, somebody inside the Republic.
Yeah, well, I mean, Darrow is like, no, it definitely wasn't a friend. It was totally them. And I think that it's probably a meet in the middle sort of situation. Obviously, we know there's someone inside giving information because how else would they have known where Pax and Electra were going to be, etc. But Darrow assuming that it absolutely had to have been the Ashlord and or Atalantia alone is like, yeah, okay, dude. This is Darrow being Darrow. It's Darrow Darrowing.
He and Mustang are like, oh, it's clearly the Ashlord. Makes me just more like, maybe they were tangentially involved, but I really think that it's somebody inside that did it.
I think Darrowing just needs to be a term for yes, when you're 100%. You're like completely trusting that nobody in your inner circle could possibly ever betray you.
What amazes me too is that he has this belief that everyone can change and everyone can be a better person, but he never changes. He's the same person.
Oh no, I think he's changed. He's definitely changed. He's devolving.
So maybe that's the way it is. Like, he always believes others can change for the better while he is completely...
He's just, like, slowly...
He's cycling down.
Yeah. It's like a whirlpool.
Well, and before they actually dive into the Ashlord stronghold, Darrow is kind of warning Alexander against like fighting with Apple. And Alexander actually thinks that Darrow would sacrifice their mission to avenge his death if Apple actually follows through with his threats against Alexander. I love how Darrow lies and says basically, yeah, sure I would. And then he like locks eyes with his niece, Rana, and she knows he's lying because unlike Alexander, she does not suffer the shared delusion of grandeur under which all gold secretly live their lives, that they're the chosen one and their time is nigh. Rana would expect me to put the mission above her. With that single look between us, I see her in a fresh light. I'm glad that him and his niece had a moment there.
Yeah, that's his niece. Oh, he'd let me die in a heartbeat.
Yeah, exactly. I don't even know what to think there. Like, is it bad? It's not good, but it's also not bad because Alexander automatically assuming that Darrow would just throw away everything to avenge his singular death is also very, again, like that delusion of grandeur. Like, I'm the chosen one and I'm Lorno Arcus's grandson outside of Lysander, who nobody knows where he is. So like, obviously he won't let me die and not like do something about it.
Everything in these chapters is just not good.
It's fucking maddening.
And then they finally get to Venus and confront Tharsis, and Darrow and Severo are just both really grossed out by Apple and Tharsis's reunion. Tharsis whines about how he didn't want to die, and Apple reminds him that he needs his big brother and offering, let's be real, probably feigned, but still offering him forgiveness that leads to Tharsis bursting into drunk tears. Darrow calls it a weird tapestry of domination and cruelty and remembers Tactus, thinking, what chance did he ever have?
And Severo looks sickened by their display, with Darrow finally feeling bad for taking his friend so far from his daughters and from Victra, causing Wolfgar's blood to be on his hands too and bringing him into this pit of devils.
About fucking time, Darrow.
You should have realized that at the beginning of this book.
I do like the hearkening back to Tactus, though.
Yeah.
Because Tactus was his own sort of devil, right? He wasn't a good person. He tried to sexually assault a girl at the Institute. He later abandoned Darrow when their ship got plowed by Karnas's ship at the Academy. And then he stole Lysander to return him to Octavia. But Tactus was the product of his own abuse. And unfortunately, again, in this society, there's like no therapy or anything. And you're told that if you're not like a winner all the time, then you're a loser. And Tactus didn't actually, I don't think deep down, want to be that person. But again, what choice did he have? What chance did he ever have to be better? And in the end, he did want to be better. And then Lorne was like, you threaten my grandkids. Fuck you. So I like that Tactus gets a mention here, but also, again, about fucking time, Darrow, that you're realizing that you are just fucking up your friends' lives because of your own fucking need to be important. I don't know, because like at this point he keeps saying I have to end this war, but it doesn't feel like that anymore. Even though Darrow's heartbreak over where he's led Severo might be too little too late, when they realize how decimated the Valley Irath forces are and Severo goes off, rightfully so, Darrow tries to tell him they'll do, but Severo hits back with the fact that they're past their prime, the forces, that is, and so is Darrow, which like, And Severo tells him, I've backed you this whole way. Someone mutters something, I knock them down and give them a good old speech. Ha! Good old Darrow speech. But you know why I've been loud as a mouse since we got here? I was waiting for you to realize how shit this is. They don't have the manpower. Apollonius is insane. This is not going to work. I didn't even want to come. It's been a month since we got any news from home. A bloody damn month.
Darrow asks him why the hell he came along then. Severo snaps, because I didn't want to raise your kid. I came to keep you breathing and to keep the rest of them safe from you.
Severo goes on to say a lot more shit, and he's right about all of it. That Darrow takes shortcuts, that he's drunk on his own myth, that he thinks he's a god, and that he can't die.
Darrow, of course, tries to protest, calling Severo emotional and telling him he can be a father on his own time. Just sack up and do your job.
Yo, rude, man.
Thanks, I hated all of that.
Yeah, rude. Fucking rude. Also, how can he have that sort of exchange and then almost go right into thinking about packs and Mustangs the way he does and still be the way he is?
Because even he's loaded into a star shell about to launch down to the Ash Lord's fortress, he remembers Pax playing with a nesting toy and being so excited about it and thinks, seeing the joy in my wife's face, I was witnessing another miracle. One, for a long time, I believed I would never see again. Love so potent, so whole and true that it hurts, because even when you convince yourself that it will last forever, you know enough of the world to see how things break and fade. But somehow, some way, you believe this love will be the exception, that it alone will last.
So he's like, Severo's being pissy about his daughters, but then he's thinking this way about it. I just... It's fine.
Everything's fine.
It's fine. Because regardless of what you think of Chuck Norris, the Howlers speaking Ragnarisms like those Chuck Norris memes is hilarious. Darrow is in his star shell. They're all in star shells. And as they're waiting to be launched into the Ashlar's fortress, they're talking about Ragnar. I love that this is a thing because Ragnar has been gone for half of Morningstar and obviously all of this book so far. But Ragnar could hold his breath for a crazy long amount of time. Ragnar could lift a mountain with his pinky, could drink an ocean without needing to pee. Ragnar's fist is the quickest way to a peerless Skard's heart. And then Severo comes in with the ringer. Unlike mortal men, Ragnar didn't sleep. He merely waited. Which I'm pretty sure is like an exact Chuck Norris meme.
Yeah, it is. And look, Chuck Norris is a piece of shit, but these were fantastic.
Yeah, well, because they're about Ragnar, whom we all love.
Exactly.
So yes, they breach the fortress, but at a dire cost. And for a minute, they don't seem to know whether Apple will come through. Though he does, and when he finally arrives to help and they finish the fight, Apple exclaims, "What wrath we summon together, Reaper and Minotaur, a divine spectacle, Darrow, a more glorious band of devils there is none. What path you cut, like fallen seraphs amongst mortal men."
This guy, y'all. He is so extra. Like, he's bad. I know.
I kind of love him.
I actually do like him, and I will say that Darrow blows it again. He had a sort of ally and screwed this one, too.
Apple is gold through and through. I don't think that he would ever actually back the Republic of his own accord or anything like that. What I do believe is that he's like a Loki, like a super fucking well-written bad guy who might have a glimmer of like not terribleness in him at times, but it's so eclipsed by the shitty things he's done and probably will do. But he's so fucking intelligent and apparently gorgeous.
Aren't all golds gorgeous? Isn't that the whole point?
Well, yes. But
Apple, there are degrees of gorgeousness.
Yes, yes. It's like Hollywood. Like, it's like A-list, B-list, C-list actors, right? Darrow is actually probably B-list. Cassius and Apple, absolutely A-list in terms of how they're described. This guy is A-list everything. And not only is he A-list looking, he is A-list talented, violin virtuoso. Now, I'll bring you back, though, to the fact that Apple is the one, I believe, who broke Tactus's violin when he was a child. Yes. And I guarantee you that was because Tactus was going to be better than him.
Almost certainly.
So, again, bad dude.
Not stated, but I bet it's because he was like, this bitch is good. Mm-hmm. And that can't stand.
Oh, yeah. It was absolutely like big bro, little bro. Like, oh, fuck him. He's going to be better than me. I'm going to break his shit.
That or he missed a note and Apple just couldn't stand it. And so he destroyed the violin.
I'm going with A.
I think so too, but I could also see him being like, how dare you?
B is always an option, yeah. When they find out that the Ash Lord is a shell of a man because Apple had him poisoned, yes, from within Deep Grave. Again, oopsie, Darrow.
Oopsie. Yeah, even as he lays in what is obviously going to be his deathbed one way or another, and definitely sooner rather than later, the Ash Lord mocks Darrow, saying, am I not as you expected? You are precisely what I expected. The destroyer of a civilization too often resembles its founders. I must apologize, Darrow, for not seeing you sooner, when you were just a boy who broke his institute. Had I opened my eyes and noticed you, what a world we would still have. But I see you now, yes, and you are immense.
There's also admiration and familiarity in his voice. And even though Darrow's hatred for him is quieted by the wretched thing he has become, he also fears heading down the same broken road, which might be a little bit late for that now, Darrow.
And all of this begs the question, if the Ash Lord has been rotting away and hiding for 3 years, who led his forces on Mercury? Who is responsible for their new tactics? Who was really behind the hollows of him on his bridge when they spoke half a dozen times? Surprise! It was Atlantia, the last fury, and honestly, gotta give the Ash Lord this. He really knows how to mock Darrow, telling him, you destroyed her home. You murdered her sisters. Now you come to take her father. She was a frivolous girl. She would have lived in peace, Darrow. But you have brought her nothing but war.
Literally quoting Darrow back at him.
Yep.
Then the Ash Lord reveals that Pax and Electra have been taken. What the what? Darrow is like, wait, what? No way. Whatever. And the Ash Lord's like, yes, they have. It was one of your own BT dubs. And he like bites down on his false tooth. He's like got foam coming from his mouth because he's poisoned himself. And Apple's like, let's just burn him alive because he's mad. Severo actually agrees with Apple, which is, I mean, it's crazy and it's not. It's crazy because Severo hates Apple and has been against him this whole time. But it's not crazy because Severo is also freaking the fuck out about the fact that his daughter was possibly kidnapped. So Severo's like, just burn him. And Darrow's like, yeah. And that's exactly what they do. They burn this guy alive. Honestly, I think it's a fitting end for somebody whose first name has never solidified itself in me because I know he's a Grimace, but he's just the Ash Lord. So yeah, they burn him alive and they leave because what else are they gonna fucking do? They've fucked up so bad. Atalantia is already at Mercury as far as they know, and whatever forces they have left there are fucked probably because the entire remnants of the society's forces are at Mercury with Atalantia as far as they know. And my God, Severo finally fucking leaves Darrow. I hate it. I really fucking hate it because what is Darrow without Severo? Not what is Severo without Darrow, okay? I think that is a very, very important distinction to make. Not what is Severo without Darrow. What is Darrow without Severo? And Severo is gone now. He leaves with Clown and Pebble to hopefully go help get their kids back. Finally, Darrow realizes that the Ash Lord was right. And this is something that I believe, Nick, you mentioned earlier. Nothing of the red remains. I am trapped in my duty, like Lorne, like Magnus himself, like Octavia. Severo and I did not understand them when we were boys, but now that we are men, we become them.
But when his friends leave him, he says no farewell, even though Severo, Pebble, and Clown have been with him for half his life. And Darrow realizes, people think I believe my own myth, that I'm a singular whirlwind of nature. I know I am not. I was the concentrated force of the people around me, balanced, hardened, inspired by Ragnar, Fitcher, Lorne, Io, and Severo.
He feels lost, but also driven. The Ash Lord and Atalantia played him for a fool, but OMG. Even for his son, he will not abandon his army. And Darrow resolves, I pull the key Pax gave me from my deck, setting aside the father, welcoming the Reaper, and letting the old rage take hold. Fucking hell.
Oh my god, like, Darrow, you suck. The fact that he literally thinks I am trapped in my duty, like Magnus Outgrimmus, that's the Ashlar's name. He is comparing himself. Now, okay, comparing himself to Lorne, that's one thing. Fine, whatever. Magnus, like Octavia? So you were basically admitting that you have become the people you thought to fight against, the people you fought to displace. You have become those people. But it's totally fine, right?
Yeah, but for different reasons. And the goals are different. So it's okay. I'm being facetious.
His goal is still to conquer. His goal is still to win.
Well, I mean, you are fighting a war that if you losing is a disaster. So yes, of course you want to win. The question is, are his strategy and tactics the correct ones to actually win the war? And that's debatable.
I mean, listen, I don't think there was any way this ever could have ended well, right? So he seceded the rim to the rim.
It could have ended well. It could have ended with the last book.
Well, yes, but then it's kind of like when the Hunger Games ends and you know that shit did not just get cleaned up that easily. They pretend that when a revolution happens, that it's all just clean at the end. Our own civil war ended with the North, the good side, winning. Did it actually end after that? No, shit, like segregation and everything continued for 100 years. Yes, they could have ended with book three, right? As Nick said, and it would have been the happy ending. But is it the logical ending? Would we want that ending? Like, would we want to just assume? I kind of like the dirtiness of where this is all going.
I absolutely do. I don't want to imply that I don't appreciate this book or Pierce's writing. I absolutely do. Unfortunately, I think Nami had it right. Like, what we end up seeing is Darrow becoming the kind of horror of who he was trying to overthrow. And he even acknowledges that a little bit here, right? And I think Pierce does a great job of giving us that, because I do think that's a pretty natural progression for the character of Darrow. It just means I hate being in his POV, because it's like, are you fucking kidding me?
So are you telling me, Nick, you would make different choices?
Jonathan, I would have made so many different choices, but...
So we will have the Nick version of Choose Your Own Adventure.
My version would be a lot shorter, because I would have died in the mines.
A Choose Your Own Adventure, like, Darrow's sort of story would be really fun. Oh my god, we got to stop coming up with these ideas of things.
Yes, we do.
Okay, so we have reached the end of Iron Gold. Jonathan, what are your last thoughts about Iron Gold?
Well, I mean, I describe this book, I think, to you as Darrow's idiotic choices should be the title of this book. I mean, he makes one blunder after another after another. And quite honestly, most of the characters in this book make bad decisions. Could have been called bad decisions, but...
A series of unfortunate decisions.
Well, I mean, unfortunate to who, though? I mean, some of them will work out well.
Almost everyone.
I'm going to go next just because I've also read this and I want Nick to conclude, but I remember reading this book and I actually got this as an ARC, an advanced reader's copy, and I read it like 3 months before anybody else did. And I was just like, holy shit, what the fuck did I just read? How am I going to move on from this? When is the next book coming out? Then everybody else read it and people were really negative about it. A lot of like, I don't like these other POVs, because people were so used to reading just Darrow's POV. But me having been so entrenched, I think, for so long in the Song of Ice and Fire fandom, I was like, hey, I'm used to multiple POVs. I'm used to not liking everything that all the people do. And also, I had already been disenchanted with Darrow from the first trilogy, which I know is a not popular opinion among the fandom, but I really liked this book, and it doesn't end well for literally anybody other than, I guess, Lysander, who I didn't want it to end well for. So
well, I'm not sure it ended well for him.
But he's getting the war he wants.
And he still has a shot at the girl he wants, but...
Yep. You
know. Yeah, and he also knows what he wants out of life or whatever, blah, blah, blah. Okay, Lysander. Yeah,
he finally knows what he wants to be when he grows up.
Now, the question for me is, why would Serafina want anything to do with him? But that's a different issue.
But all that said, this book is maddening. And I believe that a lot of people didn't like it because of how maddening it is. That's all I have to say. There's probably more I have to say, but most of it's rude, so I'm just going to keep my mouth shut. So, Nick, your turn.
I mean, I echo a lot of what y'all have said. I love this world that Pierce has created. I think he's a fantastic writer. I hated most of this book, but it wasn't because of the writing. It wasn't because of the world. It was because of these characters. And I'm okay with hating characters and still enjoying the process, you know, and the reveals that we got and the journey. I'm really interested to see where Dark Ages takes all of that. Even as I'm like, can Darrow just die or something? You know, like, I don't need him anymore. Let's have Mustang as the replacement POV. I think that would be a lot more fun and engaging. It is, I think, also a reflection, and I know, obviously, I'm amazed that there are people who can read this and not see the reflection of our own society in the caste system here. I don't think you can write about our society in the way that Pierce writes about it and not have this tension between a character's decisions and the way that they were brought up, the way that they were indoctrinated. And I appreciate the layers that Pierce uses to reflect some of those aspects of the society. So I really enjoyed the book like you did, Tara. I hated most of the characters, you know, Lyria, Volga, Mustang for the most part, or some exceptions, Sevro, obviously. But most of the characters are just like, really, y'all?
The kids, the kiddos.
Yeah, you can't really hate the kiddos because they're kids. I want to end at least my section on this. One of my complaints, I guess, one of my negatives would be I really don't like Darrow's relationship with Pax. And probably I don't like it because of how neglectful my own father was and how I don't really want to see that. And Tara, I messaged you with that quote that, mm-hmm. that we ended this section on because it's just like, what the fuck? I have no actual hope for this, but I hope that sometime in Dark Age, Darrow learns to actually be a decent father, because I completely understand that he has at least a perceived weight on his shoulders that he has to be the Reaper and he has to do all these things. But Sevro is right, and you need to be an actual decent father, because if you can't do that, then what the fuck is it all for?
Before I close out entirely, one of the things you said was the weight and ideas of what the society like pins on you and whatever. And when Darrow says, I've given up being a Red or whatever, I don't even know that that's necessarily true, because I think that the fact that he was raised as a Red is actually a part of why he continues pushing the way he does. I'm not saying it's because he's Red and it has nothing to do with gold, but I do think that there is a need for like validation that he has because he was raised as a Red that is there. His own father did what he did knowing he would get hung and would die and leave his family behind. That's the Red that I see in Darrow that I think he doesn't see in himself anymore. Ugh. Ending this on a really heavy note, which I'm sorry, but like also, Darrow, you suck. The end. As we close out the episode, we just want to give a shout out to our heroes, to your patron, Tommy of the TKOK Podcast Network. Thank you so much for supporting us. Once again, I'm Tara, along with Nick and Jonathan. Don't forget that you can always hit us up at Sogs and Sass on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter, or email us at sogsandsass@gmail.com with any comments or thoughts you might have. Just a reminder, we're on a breakthrough mid-May due to Ice and Fire Con, which is a Game of Thrones, House of the Dragon, I guess now, Song of Ice and Fire convention. And when we come back, we are kind of totally changing up how we do things. As myself and my co-hosts' schedules have changed, it's become increasingly obvious that airing live webcasts on a bi-weekly basis is simply no longer for us, as you can probably tell by the fact that we're constantly missing people. After all, we started the show during the global panini, and so much has changed since October 2020. Therefore, our Dark Age coverage, which we will start recording on or around May 10th, will be podcast only, unless you are a patron of Geek Saga Entertainment. For all tiers, $5 a month and up, our full video recordings will be available within a few hours of us recording them. And for $3 a month and up, you'll receive early access to our podcast episodes. These podcast versions, which will be by POV as they've been with Iron Gold, will take some time to edit. So you can expect them to be spread out from 2 to 10 days out-ish after we record. So please consider supporting us at patreon.com/geeksaga_entertainment for early access to these episodes. We cannot wait to be back in May to discuss what is the darkest of dark ages in the Red Rising saga, and we hope you will join us.
Thank you for listening to the Sagas and Sass podcast. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter at Sagas and Sass.